Hello, all my iridescent players, and welcome to the Dominion League Weekly Podcast. I am your host. I am your Strumpf host. And I'm once again joined by my wonderful mystery co-host. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. This is the episode for August 23rd, 2024. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm tired.
Aww.
But it will all be all right. We are slightly better prepared. Not slightly. We are much better prepared this time around than we were last week? Last time?
A week and a half, or almost 2 weeks ago, actually.
Uh-oh. And so we can now go right in.
To the standings.
Into the standings. We have commentated another A-League match.
Yeah.
The day before yesterday? 2 days ago?
Yes. Yes,
the day correct?
Before yesterday. Yeah. Yep, that's correct.
It was like last weekend, but no, it was not last weekend.
No.
It was 2 days ago. It was Akuchi v. Bitter Worm Coil. It was another very fun, very interesting, impressive match that Aku won. 4-2.
Yeah.
What else has changed? Actually,
quite a bit.
But not really.
Well, I mean, a lot of matches have been played. Let's
yes.
put it that way.
Yes.
The standings actually look identical in terms of ordering.
Yeah.
But like a lot of matches have been played. Mix played 2 matches. Yurika Momes played a match. Aku's played a match. Tracer's played a match. Bitter Worm Coil's played a match. And Siriska's played 2 matches. So
amazing.
Yeah. And yeah, so that is the order of the standings, if that wasn't obvious from the fact that I was reading the names in that order. So currently Mick and Yurika are in the driver's seat to make the championship, although they haven't played each other yet, so that potentially changes things a little bit.
And Akuchi not far far off.
Not far off. Tracer currently in fourth, but has played more games than Bitter Worm Coil and Sirisk. So, not with a great shot, but, you know, still a shot. Everybody still has a shot at this point.
Mm-hmm. And then, you will not believe it, but B1 Division has finally played some matches.
Yeah.
Incredible. Where some matches means everyone has played at least one match.
Yeah.
And most people have played 2.
Yeah, I've actually played a decent number of matches at this point. Got a lot done in the past couple weeks.
Yeah, this is the end of the 4th week.
Yeah, coming up on the end of the 4th week.
So, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not the bot, but
everyone but Shad has met the benchmark.
Oh, is it?
Let's put it that way. Yeah, the benchmark is 1 match after 3 weeks, 2 matches after 4, 3 weeks, 3 matches after 5, and then finished after 6.
Okay.
Well, it's played or scheduled, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. They definitely played a lot of matches within, like, 10 or 12 days.
Yeah.
So, Shad is currently at the top, but has only played 1 match, so we'll see. And then JNLs is in 2nd position with 3 matches played and 10.5 wins.
That's right. And then moving on to B2 division, which I happen to think is a pretty cool division for, you know, some reason.
Arguably the best division. One of the 2 best divisions.
Arguably. I think there's a strong case to be made. So that division, we've seen Brian play his first match and jump up into a tie in terms of win percent with Furkoal.
I don't remember that at all, actually. Who did Brian play?
Brian played Visunar. And yeah, so they're both at 67%, but Furkoal has played 3 matches to Brian's 1.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
surely all that's interesting or notable about that division.
Yep.
Moving on to C1, Breppert is still in the lead there, having played 1 more match and maintained 67% win rate. We have a new 2nd place player in Swordfish Trombone who has passed Mikkelsen,
mm-hmm.
or Mikkelsen, or I don't exactly know how you're supposed to pronounce that. But anyway.
Yeah. Looks like Burning Skull is keeping up his usual pace.
Well, at least he has played one match now.
Yeah. So.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. And then in C2, Xerix remains at the top, has now played 4 matches, so only 1 match left in the season for them, and so far it's looking good. They're ahead with 60%, but still a lot of... Well, actually...
Yeah, the next couple players down, we have Derpa at 56 in 3, and Knave 50% in 2, or in 3, and Salt Rose at 50% in 2. I mean, it's definitely still open, right? Like, Xerix has the advantage for sure, but there's enough games left that any of those players could realistically pass him. Even Naysala, like, could potentially pass him, so...
Mm-hmm.
Field is open, but C3, maybe not quite the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically, it's still possible, but NPMT has a 92% win rate.
Whoa.
In 2 matches, has gone 11-1. That is...
Amazing.
That is pretty crazy. So this is having played against...
Whoa.
Iris and Spiraler. That's really impressive. And then Xander G, or Xanderg, is second with 83% in 1 match, so a 5-1 victory over Abasio. So I think we can reasonably project, I mean, you never know, but we can, until you do mathematically, but we can reasonably project that this is kind of a binary division where we've got, like, the Bobby DJ is at third with 7-5 win rate, and I think it's safe to assume that one of those 3 players is going to come out on top here. But I mean, it's not a given at this point.
Yeah, that's definitely a very, very good start into the season for NPMT.
That's very unusual to see as high as C.
In C, yeah.
Very impressive.
Very cool. And incidentally, you and I, me and you, are going to commentate a C3 match tomorrow.
That's right. Between Xander G, I don't know, versus IRS42. I don't know where they're from, but like...
Xander is from the US and Iris is from Hungary. I have learned.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so that makes me less inclined to think it's Xander, because that's like not like a very common...
But it's... Yeah, no, I know. I mean,
well, like it could be like named Xander, and then
yeah.
G could be the first, you know, like kind of like A Libby or what, Sierra Lundy or something like that.
Yeah.
Just the other way around.
Yeah.
Maybe we should ask them before we commentate that match.
Whoa, what? I think your display name on Discord is actually just Xander. So
that further reinforces my belief then that it's probably not Xanderg.
Yeah.
So C4. Being led by new-to-league player Communal, still.
But no, who has not played any further matches since last time.
Right. The rest of the division has played some more matches, though. Lemonspawn with 4 matches complete. So in a tie with a couple of other people for the leading the most matches played in the upper tiers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, still a long ways to go for most of the division there.
Yeah. And then over in D tier, we have Hadarge and Will Wong in tied first place, but Hadarge has played 1 more match, so Hadarge now basically tied Will Wong in first place. Icall does not seem to have a good season this time around, but still has 1 match left. So maybe they can swing it.
Yeah, the best they can do is 13-17, which is still pretty rough.
Yeah.
I think it'd be hard to avoid demotion with that. Who are their last matches against Koini? Well, that does help a little bit because that's somebody who's like not it, like who could potentially drop down into one of the final 2 slots.
Mm-hmm, but it's going to be tough. So
for sure,
Icall definitely got their work cut out for them.
Yeah.
And then in D2, Scumpy and Alibi1152 are still... Oh, no. Scumpy has Oh, Scampi has like finished their season and like very, very
yeah,
very impressively.
Yeah, they had an 83% win rate through two matches, and they basically maintained that for the rest of the season, which is pretty insane.
Very impressive.
So over five matches, 82% win rate.
Yeah.
Yeah, they basically like
very dominant.
They were close to averaging a 5-1. Like, they had two 5-1s, a 4-2, a 6-0, and then a 5.5 to 1.5. So it's like, if they had won that tie, like, in that one match, they would have averaged a 5-1 for the season, which is nuts.
Yeah. Can we look at Scampi, please? Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. They are a regular C player. They just... Oh, no, they played in D2 seasons now, but that was...
They were
very dominant season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They had a really good season last season too.
They
it's
did.
Just that it was like a
yeah.
super unbalanced division
yeah.
with
yeah.
three or sorry, four players above yeah. 17 wins, and they finished in third with 18.5, which is
super close.
Which is already pretty insane.
Yeah. So yeah, no surprise there, but very impressive and guaranteed to win.
Oh yeah, yeah. They've won this one going away. Like, it is not only are they like.
Is that going to be the tier record?
That's an interesting question. Let's check that. I also just wanted to see, like, is it even. So the only player in their division that has fewer losses than Scampi is Arf Arf Arf. So I guess it's actually. In principle, possible that Arf 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 could win like every single game for the rest of the season and pass Scampi.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen. I'm gonna register that prediction now. So best season by tier D. No, 90% by Mike Chyke in season 26.
Well,
yeah,
still.
Yeah, but
still very
but I mean,
impressive.
Yeah,
like how long is it going to take for us to see another 90% win? Probably.
Well, the fact that we haven't seen one over 30 seasons, almost 40 seasons.
Yeah.
I mean that should tell you. And like at the time that happened, like the D tier was not as strong as
it
is now too. So
exactly.
Like it's harder now than it would have been at the time.
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, definitely a very very strong run.
Yeah, I mean I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is the strongest D result in the past, say, like 10 or 20 seasons.
Yeah.
I'd have to check.
I could see that.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Shout out to Scampi.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to D3, where Jean-Michel has taken over first place from Birds of Siberia.
Yeah. Well, really, there was a four-way tie. We didn't know why... Why Birds
True.
Of Siberia was singled out as like leading the division, but now there's the tie has been broken a little bit. I guess there's just well, it's a different set. It's not the same set of players, but there's still three players all tied at 50%, and then Jean-Michel at 58% with a 7-5 in two matches.
Yep, and B-Spar 29 remains at the top of D4, and Chastik. Was able to break the tie for second place, so right now holds on to that precious second promo spot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still pretty open. The first three places are more or less close together.
Yeah, they're all competitive, and even like the fifth place player has only played one match, so they might have a shot too.
That's true.
All right, so moving on to E tier. We have a new leader in E1, which is Stoned Mason, with an 8-4 record over two matches, overtaking all ST, DFT, I don't know, all standard feet. I don't really know what that is. And Kriesta, the latter of whom is just a little bit behind percentage-wise, 67% to 64%, so that should be a pretty close finish in E1.
Mm-hmm. And then in E2, Scravian is holding on, like basking in the glory of a clean sweep at the top and not playing any other matches for fear of not being able to maintain that sweet 100% win rate.
That's right.
And in tied second and third, in tied second place are Oscar Eigenrohr and Tony Wilde. And then Blackson is, for now, having a rough season.
Yep. And then we got Tufte leading the way in E3, having broken away from Micha 1980 or Micha 1980, who actually was tied for the lead, but has dropped all the way to fifth place. Tufte is at 75% over two matches, and then there's a three-way tie in at 50% for second place.
Yeah. Viking 39 has already finished their season run, shout to them, and is now at exactly 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And then in E4, RJL has finished their season and is now at a tight first spot with Dim886, with 60%, which is a very solid,
mm-hmm.
Solid season run, I would say.
Yeah. I would guess, I don't know, but I would guess that 18 wins, getting 18 wins wins your division a majority of the time. Like, if you, like, over 50% of the time, if you get 18 wins, you win your division. That would
actually
be my guess.
Like, from my experience with tier champs, like, we do for E tier, we go by... Okay, well, that's different. Okay, no, yeah, I see what you mean. I was gonna say, like, we go by win percentage, right? And 60 should get you in, but sometimes doesn't. But that's also, like, across divisions.
That's top four, right?
Yeah, it's the top four, exactly.
It's not all the division winners.
Exactly.
Like, it's gonna vary by tier. So, like, I think...
Yeah.
Generally speaking, the higher the tier, the more true that's gonna be. But I don't haven't done the math, but my guess is that the inflection point is around 17 wins, where, like, once you get to 18 wins, maybe 17 and a half, you're winning the majority of the time. That would be my guess.
I would say from, like, tier champs and the E champs, it's usually between 63 and 72. It rarely gets higher than 72, like the four that are being invited.
Mm-hmm.
But it's usually, like, 63%, 65, 67, and then maybe 72.
Yeah.
That's usually. And we definitely, I can go back and check, but I don't remember having anyone above E with 80% or more. Like, that's so rare. I'm just thinking again of Scumpy. Yeah.
I would say, yeah, like, I feel pretty confident that once you get to 19 wins, you are winning your division the majority of the time, which is still less than 67% win rate. But, like, 19 wins is super strong. Like, it is very rare to not win your division.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't say very rare, but it is rare to not win your division with 19 wins.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 18, I still think it's, like, it's not rare, but I think it's probably less than half the time that you aren't winning the division. Anyway, I could be wrong. Somebody could do the math. Maybe somebody in the League Mod team has done the math, but if they have, I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, so speaking of high win rates in E5, we have... Mazel Tov, still leading the way, still hasn't played another match, but went 5-1 in their first match, and then two-way tie now in second place between TG Taft and Magivi.
Yeah, so basically E5, and all of E5, in the past, I don't know, 12 days or so, two games have been played.
I think that's right.
Which is not much.
Yeah,
it's true. Play some matches.
Yeah. And then E6, however, we do have some more matches played by the division leader. McQFly has now got a 61% win rate over three matches, out ahead of a three-way tie in second at 50% win rate between Mom of Five, Kai Deep, and Always Just in Time.
Mm-hmm. And our last division, E7, we had a tie for first place that is now broken. So now Valcia Omatu is at the top with a clean 67% win rate in 3 matches.
That's right. So there you have it.
There you have it. Ooh, results comments. I have to give them one. I did collect some. Okay. Oh, that one I did say, right? The good games, time for bed, lol.
Yep.
Okay. So, there was a match in J7 between Star to Simone and Chidi Butts. I'm playing Chidi Butts for Coven on the weekend. And Star to Simone won 4-2, and they said, "Super fun games, we'll never buy Poet again."
That seems like a little strong of a reaction.
What did Poet ever do to you?
Fail to draw cards, probably.
That's as if I would say I'm never gonna, like, I'm gonna ban Courier or something because I lost 2 of my games against the Butcher with, like, Courier or whatever.
Spoilers for your personal weekend
games. Oopsie! Okay, then in H9, Keiki won 4-2 against La Fonda and said, "Good games all around once one of us got a subscription." Which kind of feels to me like they started playing, they played 2 base games, and they were like, "No, this is not, no. We have to buy a subscription."
Mm-hmm.
Like, this, I can't deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm sure is not what happened. And then favorite results commentator Redley played 4-2 against the Math Raccoon 51 in G6. And said in all caps, "Scary!"
But what were they scared of?
The Math Raccoon.
I guess.
I don't know.
Maybe they were just watching the new Alien movie while they played the match.
Probably. Vitz was playing against Vitz. I don't know who they were playing against. But they submitted it incorrectly.
Against themselves.
For J7. And they said, "Great games. Pulled each game out of my ass on the final play."
Oh, yes. And I did want to say here that while I am not a medical professional, and so nothing that I should say should be taken as professional medical advice, I don't think that storing games of Dominion in your rectum is appropriate behavior. I think that that's dangerous, and you should find other storage solutions.
Thank you. And that's it for the results comments. Tier champs are still dormant because we're only in the 4th week of the season, although I might message Scumpy. I don't know. It might feel... Maybe they're superstitious. Maybe I shouldn't...
Very superstitious.
Do you think that would be, like, bad etiquette to message them?
I would just stick to whatever your normal practices are.
Yeah. Okay. Other tournaments. If you have not registered for the Dominion Online Championship yet, but you are interested in playing, please just register. Sign-ups are open. And I'm very pleased to announce that now that Bintian is on vacation, I have a shot at onboarding more players than her. Because this is a race, yes. You are already signed up.
I am.
How do you feel about DOC?
Well, first of all, do you know who onboarded me?
Bintian.
Yes, that's correct. So, how do I feel about DLC? Well, the first way that I feel is that if you don't know where to go to sign up, you can either go into the Shuffle It Discord and check out the channels for this year's tournament, or you can go to the championship channel in the Minion Discord, and there are links there that will take you to the appropriate place in the Shuffle Discord. So that's the first way that I feel about it.
Wow.
But the second...
That's a very specific way to feel about a tournament.
The second way that I feel about it is that it's... I don't love single elimination as a format. I mean, I basically probably have single elimination to thank for the fact that I made, like, the top 16 2 years ago because, like, I was not one of the 16 best players in that tournament, I'm sure, but... You know, single elimination, so like weird stuff happens. But that also cuts the other way as well. And you can, you know, just like bounce out early. So I tend to prefer the format of other tournaments, but it is cool to have like this one tournament that like almost all the good players join and like sort of acts as a, like, you know, not everybody likes the league format and, you know, people rotate in and out of league. So there's not like any one particular point in time where it's like, oh, all the good players are playing in league right now. And it's not like literally every good player plays in DOC, but it's like the proportion is quite high. And I think it's just cool to have a tournament that has like all these good players participating in it and where you can like tell yourself that maybe the results of it are meaningful.
I mean, yeah.
Which I think mostly they're not. But a little bit. Like, if you win the tournament, that is meaningful. I will say that. Like, nobody wins DOC without being a really good player.
I think if you make top 8, that's meaningful.
The fact that I was one match away from making top 8 makes me feel like it can't be meaningful.
But,
I
like, mean, you didn't.
To be fair, I did get stomped in my top 16 match. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. I just still feel like, what if I had gotten a different seed? Like, I played against one of the strongest players in that top 16. Like, what if I had gotten a different seed and, like, played against somebody and, you know, got lucky and won? I don't know. You might be right. But it's definitely, winning the whole thing is the thing where I'm very confident. Like, you are, like, not just, like, a good player, but, like, a great player if you win that tournament.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I'm not so sure. I mean, probably you could say the same thing for whoever like loses the finals, but like, you know, I don't know. It just feels easier to just say, take the like the winner for me and say that about them. But yeah, that's how I feel.
Okay. I was considering also playing in the tournament, but it's I don't think I'm like mentally in a good enough spot to actually do that. I think it would be very stressful. I think I have like good chances to make it past round one, but then I would probably, because I'm like part of the people who do not like to ladder, so my seed is super, super low.
You'd be underseeded for sure.
Yeah.
Like way underseeded.
you're
although there is a fee cap, but you also probably, it's not just that your fee is too high, it's that your mu is lower than it would be if you laddered, because you, the last time you laddered, you weren't as good as of a player as you are now.
Yeah.
So yeah. And that makes more of a difference. Like, if you're like literally the best player, in theory it doesn't really matter what your seed is, although it does because of variance, but like the farther you are from being the best player, the more that it matters if you are underseeded. Like, the more of a detriment it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to like a Rising Sun release tournament or a Rising Sun mix or something. I think that would be fun. That was also my question. How do you feel about DOC with regard to Rising Sun? Does that make any difference to you?
Not really. I mean, okay. Rising Sun cards will be in DOC. Rising Sun cards are cool, but like, it's not like I'm like, oh, DOC's different now.
But is that gonna change your approach to it? Are you gonna like ladder more to get more of a feeling for Rising Sun, or
I'll ladder because I don't want to be underseeded.
Yeah. Okay. But you're not gonna,
although I won't have very much time for it, but you know, I'll do what I can. Try to at least get to like level, like back to like level 60 or something.
Try to like get at least to receiving a buy?
Yeah, well, I mean, that can, depending on the number of signups, like sometimes there's like, you know, it could be like there's 3 buys total, or there's like 200 buys and you're gonna get one regardless. But
yeah,
I mean, if it's near the cutoff, like mostly I should really not put it in terms of level, I should put it in terms of fee, like try to get my fee down to like 0.4 or 0.3 or something like that. I don't know what it is right now, but
let's look at the signup list, the current signup list.
Alrighty.
Because I think right now, like if signups would end now, I think you're out of the.
Oh, there's a tiny range. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not that far out of it. My fee is 0.485, so it's, yeah, even getting it down to 0.4 would be a significant difference, but yeah. I mean, what'll happen is there'll be more signups and it'll shrink, and then there'll be more signups and it'll expand a whole bunch, and then there'll be more signups and it'll keep shrinking again. Like, it that's kind of goes in cycles. Mm-hmm. It's like right now it's under 128. It'll keep shrinking until it hits 129, then it'll be like a huge number of buys, and then it'll keep shrinking again unless it hits 256.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mostly I just would like to get, like, I don't know, like, there's people whose fee is like 0.2. I'm never gonna get down to that. But if I could get to like 0.3 or something, that would be something.
Sure would.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
If I could do that while maintaining my Mew, I could get a really high seed, but I probably won't be able to do that. If I play a bunch more games, my Mew will go down. Oh, well.
Yep.
It's fine.
Okay. So, now it's time to talk about our personal week in games. Would you like to start?
Sure. So, in the past almost 2 weeks, I have played two league matches, one against Visunar and one against Furkoll. And I went 6.5 and 5.5 over those two matches,
mm-hmm.
which I consider to be pretty successful considering the context of playing in B against very strong players.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing about all of this is that Visunar made a great video about one of the games that we played featuring Change. It's like both good analysis and displays good editing skills. I was very impressed with it and thought it was a lot of fun to watch. And I would recommend anybody who's interested in that kind of thing, go check it out. It's in the video's channel.
Yeah.
Like,
excellent video.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like definitely like a high effort production, and it shows. And I thought Visunar was very like thoughtful in how he discussed the kingdom and the different decision points that we made. And yeah, just an excellent video.
Yeah. And like for people who have very little experience with Dominion, and like for people like us, it was super instructive and informative, and like, yeah, just very low level, very good video.
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily like designed to be like super intro level. Like, I think it might be a little hard to follow if you really don't know what's going on. But I think if you have, you know, a bit of a foundation, like, it's not asking you to be a top-level player to understand it by any means.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, go check that out. But yeah, other than that, just pretty happy with being currently in third place in my division, not more than slightly over 50% win rate. I'm 58%, so 10.5 and 7.5. And, like, if I can just, like, stay in B this season, I will be quite satisfied.
Which looks likely right now.
It does look likely, yeah. I think the Marcus predictions originally had me losing comfortably. It was, like, mm-hmm. originally it was, like, expecting me to win, like, 11 games, which I've almost already done.
Mm-hmm.
Currently it has me projected to stay in third and expected to finish with 16.5 wins, which is, you know, that's solid. So, yeah.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. So, that's cool. And I will be playing against Zomsraft next weekend, I believe it is. Not this coming Sunday, but the Sunday after at 1 p.m. Eastern. So, 17 UTC.
Okay.
And I do not currently have any plans to play Brian, but they will be formulated at some point.
You have to. It's like,
it will happen.
Yeah. Inevitable.
Yep. And how about you?
Well, I finished my season today, earlier today. So I've been, playing a pretty fast season. I am very happy to, like, not have lost a single match, and I finished with 19 wins, so 63% win rate, which should secure me the promotion. I hope that it also, like, FS double promo. I hope that it also is going to be enough for the win. That would be pretty sweet, because I would love playing in F champs. But if not, then that's fine. Like, my goal was to promote back up to E, because I feel like that's more where I see myself, mm-hmm. I guess, as a player in League. I'm pretty happy with my performance. I'm always angsty, of course. but I feel like I played some good games and good matches. I also played Saltrosa for Coven, and we always play Fancy Stuf. Like, we use the Coven Endless Swiss tournament to just, like, do stuff that we don't get to do in regular matches. And of course, this time that meant Rising Sun. So we played 2 games of the 4-game match with Divine Wind Forest, and then the other 2 with just 3 random Rising Sun cards. And that went pretty well too. We had a pretty insane Divine Wind Black Market board that was just super wild and truly took forever, as you may expect. But yeah, that was very fun. And then I'm going to play HD Butts, as I've already mentioned, this weekend for the Coven.
It is conceivable to me to...
So it's a lot of Dominion for me this week.
Yeah. It's conceivable to me that you have already clinched promotion, like, mathematically, depending on what the matchups are. Because, like, for example...
Oh, that's true.
For Ruapati to pass you... Well, Ruapati cannot pass you. True. Sokolovich can't pass you. For the Butcher to pass you, they would have to win every single game.
Yeah.
Which means that they would have to clean sweep Tillo, which would put Tillo already at 10. So, okay, I guess technically, if the Butcher won out and Tillo didn't lose... Mm-hmm. And the Butcher, so Tillo went 6-0 against Benlin, but 0-6 against Butcher, then maybe you finish in third at that point? That's really unlikely. Mm-hmm. Oh, and also Tillo would have to 6-0 Ruapati. But yeah, I think you have very nearly clinched promotion. And like I said, 19 wins is usually, like, quite strong. It's like,
yeah. Well, in the lower tiers,
It's a little less. Yeah, that's true. It's a little less certain, like, as you go down, but
yeah.
Yeah. It's a good season.
Yes. Yep. And yeah, I enjoy the Rising Sun cards. I've been playing a lot, so I'm kind of getting a better feel for them, and yeah, it's a very fun expansion.
Yeah. I haven't played nearly enough Rising Sun yet. I really want to get to the ladder games, but for some reason I keep not having an opportunity to play the ladder games. So
strange. Very strange. No. All right. I think that concludes the Dominion part of this podcast. This is SpecChat, where we talk about any piece of media we have consumed over the period of time since the last episode that is strictly non-Dominion related. Please start.
Okay. I will start by saying we're going to talk about Umbrella Academy. This, the fourth and final season of which, like, just dropped within the past, week or something.
On the day that the 2 pandas were born in the Berlin Zoo.
Uh-huh. And so if you're interested and you're worried about spoilers, there will be spoilers. I don't think that's avoidable in discussing this. So if that's of concern to you, you may want to watch out for that and avoid listening to this segment.
Yeah, I will give chapter marks so you can skip ahead.
Cool. So with that being said, yeah, this last season was not very good.
No, I think it was pretty good, but it was just too short, and it kind of caught us off guard that it was just 6 episodes instead of the usual 10. I think if I had, like, going in, if I had known it was 6 episodes, maybe it wouldn't have been so jarring. I don't think it was bad.
I think it was bad.
Fine. I have a lot of love for this show. I don't know. I've grown very fond of it. I love the music. I love the characters and how they, the dialogue, how they like work together just as characters, not like what they do. But so maybe I'm cutting it slack there that I shouldn't.
Well, the thing is, I think all that stuff is valid. I just think that they didn't. Like, I think they didn't deliver on that stuff as much in the final season, and I also think the final season did a lot of other stuff that I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I will just mention a couple of things. Like, one big complaint that I have that does not just apply to Umbrella Academy is I really do not like the trope of, like, you know, like, where, like, the foundational mistake, you know, that is, like, the whole reason there's a problem is because somebody, like, wasn't able to accept death. Like, where, like, the whole message, and in the end, like, even if that wasn't, like, what the message was throughout the show, by the end, the whole message boils down to, if you have to just be okay with death. I really don't like that as a central theme. I think it is, not only do I think it is overplayed and tired, I also just disagree with it on a fundamental philosophical level. Like, I you know, so that you have this character who is a very bad person, but his, like, driving motivation is he wants to, like, bring back his wife from the dead. And, like, you could say, well, you know, he did need to accept it instead of doing all this bad stuff, which is, like, valid, but it's, like, a choice that the writers made to have, like, the reason he does the bad stuff is because he wants to bring back his wife. And, like, he has to do bad stuff to bring back his wife as opposed to doing stuff that doesn't have all these, like, horrible consequences or whatever, right? Like, that was, like, a choice that they made. Like, it's, you know, it could just as well be the case that he could just be, you know, a bad person, or he wants to bring back his wife and, like, that doesn't have negative consequences. Then you just, like, you know, explore what that's like. Like, but then, like, the lesson is, like, oh, you just had to, like, you know, let go, and it was okay that I died because I was being punished for my mistake, which I also think is, like, ridiculous. Like, you made a mistake, like, there was basically an accident, and then, like, you died, and, like, that's, like, justice or something? Like, no. So, but then on top of that, so, like, that's, like, a foundational thing that I don't like that comes up in a bunch of media. But then on top of that, like, the way that they resolved his, like, arc, if you will, was to have him, it's just, like a light switch. Like, he's, like, he's just, like, completely ends justify the means. The entire show just, like, unrestrictedly, unrepentingly, like, there's just no shred of, like, remorse or anything like that in him. And then right at the end, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, yeah, you're right. I did the wrong stuff. Sorry. And then just he accepts, like, the inevitable. I was like, where did that come from?
Yeah, totally, totally. I agree. I agree. Because, like, the season kind of at first feels like season 3, right? Where he had this whole thing with Klaus, and he was, like, they were working on their relationship, seemingly. Mm-hmm. And he was, like, training Klaus in his abilities and stuff, like, only to then betray him at the end, because that's what he always does.
Right.
And so in this season, we see kind of a similar thing with Victor this time. So we're like, oh, well, he's doing that thing again. Yep. But then it turns out that, like, there is no betrayal because he has, like, the switch and is like, okay, fine.
Yep. So, exactly. And I was like, this just seems, like, I don't know.
Out of,
like,
character.
Yeah, out of character. And, like, the ending, like, with his wife takes, it's like one scene where they have this confrontation. He's like, oh, you're right.
Which I will, like, say was very funny, because, like, because she's, like, first, she's still, like, in the skin of
She's still
of
Nick
Jean.
Offerman.
which was super funny.
That was funny, yes. And it was like, when they had the encounter where he would, like, before that, like, mm-hmm. with both Jean's and Victor, like, it was really funny when, like, like, Jean, he's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, you're that was such funny. A man's perspective.
Yeah.
You're a man. What?
That was so good.
But
I if I may. Feel like I agree with your perspective. I will say I did think like the end, like the solution to like the constant like time travel conundrums, the solution that they have to embrace, like the Umbrella Academy just embrace annihilation basically to restore the original timeline, kind of felt like in universe that felt like sensical to me. I thought that was fine. I still don't understand why that, like, their families, or like Lila and Diego's family and Claire, somehow are now in the original timeline.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I they already had a solution going into the season, which was like remove the Marigold and other normal people.
That's fair.
This like annihilation thing to me, again, it felt like we don't know how to put these characters back into like the world, like push the reset button. So we'll just get rid of them instead. Like, and I feel similarly about it. It's like they set it up in a way where it's like, oh, you have no other choice, so you have to sacrifice yourself.
Mm.
But like, you know, you have to accept annihilation. But I don't like that as a message. And then I also don't like the fact that like it runs counter to the way, like, there was throughout the entire show, there's all of this like angst and drama and fighting and consternation and whatever, where characters are disputing how to solve problems. Like, they don't just take, like, some people, you know, somebody will present a solution to a problem, and like some people will say, yeah, that makes sense, and some people say no way, and they'll have a big fight about it, and they'll go off and do their own thing. And this is like the one time where they're all just like, yeah, I mean, they have a conversation about it, but it lasts like one scene and that's it. And they just accept it. And it's like, it's only, and it would only, they only even found out about this like earlier in the same episode. It's like, they, you know,
the pacing was extremely off.
Yeah.
Especially because, like, yeah, so we were both expecting it to be a full season, and up until episode 5, like, the pacing was totally, like, cut out to, well, this is a 10-episode season, because you had this whole thing with Lila and 5, and then everything happened, like, everything was wrapped up in one single episode, and that was just not well done.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess I also felt like it did, like, I think it did do an injustice to some of the characters. I think some of them, like, didn't, like, have enough to do. Like, if you compare, not even just, like, the main characters, but, like, Jean and Jean pairing were, like, a fun set of characters in a similar vein to, like, you know, Hazel and Cha-Cha in the first season and stuff like that. But then they kind of got the rug pulled out from under them. And also the way that they did it, like, you know, having the wife go and like murder them, like, even though their goals were aligned, I did not understand like why she was even doing that. Like, why was she interfering? And like, if she's supposed to be the moral compass here, that's like saving Reg, why is she just like murdering these people? Like, what was that all about?
Yeah. Like, yeah, definitely fumbled the ball there.
Yeah.
I agree.
So, I think it would have been fine, like, to basically, like, I think it would have been okay to just, like, for them to find a way back to the original timeline in a sort of more normal fashion, where, like, you know, in the first season, they, like, you know, sort of jumped out of the timeline in order to save the world, but that they ended up, like, doing stuff in, you know, the 60s, and that like caused all this other stuff. And I think it would have been okay to just basically like find a reset button on that. I guess they wanted, I mean, I don't know, the writers wanted to have like a more thorough way of like blowing it all away, but it all, like, it's you know, it's almost like, and it was all a dream thing where then like they had no impact on the world. They didn't exist. Like, why did we even, like, tell this story? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not entirely fair, because, like, the story still, like, we still experienced the story. It was still fun and all that stuff. But it's, like, from the perspective of, like, the state that it leaves the world in, I feel like it's extremely unsatisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, a bit of a letdown. A more, like, sad send-off, I feel like, for a very, very fun show that I have a lot of a lot of love for.
I would just rewatch like the earlier seasons if I were going to rewatch it, and then maybe not bother with the last one.
Yeah. So, what was your favorite season?
I mean, probably the first season, but I'd have to go back and think about that a little bit more.
Hmm. I think my favorite season was the third.
Interesting. Yeah,
like the second and the third. The first is definitely not among my favorites, but the second season I thought was pretty cool, and the third season was amazing just because like I really love the hotel, and it's just, you know, the characters much better.
Yeah, that's true.
The banter is so great, and then you have like Victor's transition, which was just like handled so effortlessly.
Yeah.
So smoothly, like
I guess the main thing that I feel like the first season has over the later ones is that like the world building is more coherent. Like it doesn't
mm-hmm.
like all the time travel stuff, like they do their best, but it does kind of have a tendency to like crack at the seams when you examine it. Although the stuff that they do with Five in like the second and third season, maybe it's particularly the second season, is like really, really fun with all the like
mm-hmm.
time travel shenanigans. And I think Five is the best character in the series. So,
like, ooh, yeah. Hot take.
Or at least of the main cast, but like probably just period. Like he's just, the actor is great. The like,
the
concept
really
is really funny.
Yeah.
Like I just think it's, yeah, he's fantastic. He's like, basically, up until near the end, I'm always happy to see him on screen.
Yeah.
Then in the last season, like when he gets all mopey because of the whole Lila thing, it's like, maybe not now.
Gross. It's like, I only know this because of these like Bachelor recap videos that I watch, because the person who does them always splices in like scenes from The Office.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like this one clip where The Office guy says, "No! No! No!"
Oh, that's a meme. That's like straight a meme. The Michael Scott, yeah.
Yeah, that was me with the Lila and Five.
No!
No! Yeah. Okay.
There's also, it's like, is it the same one where he says like the, "God, no!"
Yeah, yeah, like, that is the same.
"No, God, no!
Yeah.
No!"
Yeah, that was me. Okay, so the second thing we want to talk about is the musical The Book of Mormon, which we have watched this past weekend.
For the first time.
And for those of you who are not in the know, it's a musical that was written by the South Park creators.
Mm-hmm.
And one other person, I think. But, like, mostly them. Like, definitely them. That should give you an idea of what the musical is like.
Yeah.
It's very crass, as you would expect. It's very funny. A very good show. Can definitely recommend.
Yes.
To people who don't have, like, religious sensitivities. yeah.
They say that, like, plenty of, you know, people with those sensitivities have enjoyed the show. I couldn't speak to that personally, but that's what they say.
True. So it's a story, again, if you don't want to be spoiled, then maybe just stop listening to the episode right now. but it's a story of two Mormon teenagers who are sent out on a mission to Uganda.
On their mission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can imagine what Uganda looks like through like this, how do you say that? Like through that lens that is South Park creators.
Well, and it's their lens, but it's also intended to be the lens of Mormons in particular, and you know, maybe like, you know, affluent white Americans more generally.
Yeah. So yeah, it doesn't matter that it's Uganda. It's just like it's just set dressing.
Yeah. It could be Arstotzka, except in Africa, whatever that you would call that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's South Park, right? So half of the jokes are like feces and excrement related and saying like stuff. And that is fun. Like, you don't usually hear that as part of a musical song. I will give it that. But that's definitely, I don't know, for me, a little juvenile.
Yeah.
But like the other half is just like very witty and, I don't know, very, very sarcastic, biting remarks about the Mormon church. And in this household, we definitely enjoy that.
Yeah, I will say, I actually think it's significantly less crass than like South Park is.
That's fair.
There's definitely like some stuff in there, but there's a fair amount of it that's like, you know, that isn't, that's really not like there.
I mean, the Hasadiga Ibuwai.
That's even that. Yeah, like part of it is very much, but like the core of the song isn't really about being crass. It's more about them being blasphemous.
Yeah.
The rhyme, like in the Salt Lake City song, the rhyme with the word shitty like stands out, right?
Yeah.
Like, in a way that it wouldn't if it was, like, just nonstop, like, barrage of cursing or something
like that. Yeah. For sure.
But, yeah. Very fun show. Has some... It goes in some, I would say, surprising directions.
Mm-hmm. It's very subversive. Like, not only... It's subversive of, like, narrative tropes of musicals. It's also, like, musically subversive. It's just... Yeah. It's very... smart.
Yeah. I would say in a way it's this, like, as a commentary on religion, I don't know that it's, I would, from my perspective as somebody who has sort of been down those roads before, it doesn't feel like it's necessarily bringing a ton of new ideas to the table there. It's more just like shining the spotlight specifically on Mormonism, which isn't typically where it is. And then it's also like doing it in a format that's not typical. Like it's not normally in a musical format, but I think that the way that it plays with the musical as a format is the more subversive part of it to me and my experience. Though that may be because I am not, you know, the most well-versed in musical theater, but that's to me, that like stood out. Like there's some things that they do like from a, like you said, from a storytelling standpoint, there's even some things they do from a sort of like mechanical standpoint, like with the actual, like, you know, like the lighting and the sound and stuff like that. That's like, you know, clever that, you know, you don't tend to see and other stuff. So yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. And definitely happy to have seen it finally.
Yeah. And this premiered in 2011, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we assume has been updated some.
Yes. Well, we know.
We know, yeah.
Yeah.
In the meantime. So if you have the chance and you are so inclined, definitely check it out. It was hugely entertaining.
Yes. Yes. A lot of fun. Probably does it for Spec Chat, yes?
Yep. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, my lovely mystery co-host, for doing these episodes with me. It was very fun.
I greatly enjoyed it and would be happy to do it again.
If,
assuming that you don't get tons of messages of people saying, oh my god, no, get him out of there.
That was terrible. I stopped. I unsubscribed.
Unsubscribed. Disliked and unsubscribed. Oh my god, you've posted cringe. You will lose subscriber.
Unhit the bell. I unsubscribed and I disliked. Yeah. If you have any other feedback, then be sure to DM that to me. I am @Strumpf. And I will see you all next time. Sign up for DOC. The game has ended. Bye!
Bye!